Radioversity, the voice of Reichman University.
The Dodgy Linesman with Adam Rahway, Dan Moritz, Yoni Gill, and Aaron Herbert.
Hello, guys. Welcome back to The Dodgy Linesman, brought to you by Audioversity. I'm Alberto Abadi. I'm here with Adam Rahway, Roy Eman, and Alan Frieda. Hello, how are you guys?
Good to be back. It's
Thank you for having us.
It's been a while.
Yeah, it has been a long while. Bit of holidays and everyone moving around, but we're back and we have been watching. We have been eyeing down this crazy, crazy Premier League that we are watching this season. It's amazing. It's amazing. I think it's probably one of the most fascinating leagues that we've seen in recent years, at least. I mean, 9 teams in the relegation battle, that's never been seen before.
Yeah.
Never been seen.
You can't predict who's going down. And I also think you can struggle to predict the teams outside the Champions League. It's hard to predict who's getting Europa at this point.
Yeah. And I think the least fascinating thing of it all is actually the title race. I think that's probably the least thing that people are keeping tabs with. But speaking of the top six, you know, what the hell is going on at Chelsea, huh? Roy? Care to chip in, our in-house Chelsea fan?
It's a bad time to be a Chelsea fan. I don't know what's going on in the club, but no one wants to be there from what I can see. Every play is just no passion. They just nothing. I see them and you would think that you bring Lampard in for the vibes and people are saying, okay, you bring him in for the confidence, but there's nothing there.
No, I think they brought Lampard in because they didn't want to sign a manager this season, the last, 2 months, and then people start criticizing him because he hasn't started to get results. I think that they're waiting for that long preseason this summer and to get, to really get the team together, get them to some training camp in like some exotic part of the world.
Mobs.
I'll be honest, I can't see a manager wanting to come into this project.
Nah.
Todd Bowley, the stupid owners who don't know what they're doing, sacking Potter after, 6 months, giving him a 5-year contract. Why would you want to go into that puzzle? Yeah. You'd want to go into that mess. We're 11th. We've won the least games since October. We're the worst in the league currently. We lost to Southampton, who are managerless. We're probably going to lose all of our rest of our games, maybe get a draw or two. We have Manchester United, Nottingham Forest. We have City. We have Arsenal. And we have Brentford.
You're not winning.
We're not winning. We'll maybe get a draw against Brentford, maybe.
Look,
we're the worst team in the league.
What I think, look, the thing that confuses me is the dynamics, okay? I understand that Todd Bowley is not the right owner for Chelsea. They had to sell the club under very, very extreme circumstances, very urgent circumstances. Mm-hmm. But to me, Roman Abramovich was probably the best owner in football in the history of the Premier League. In my opinion,
I'd say,
and he never spoke. And you see what Todd Bowley—he
never said
the clown.
A word. He did everything behind the curtain, but did it well.
Do you see what Bowley said?
Got about results, Real Madrid. got league titles, got Champions Leagues.
Who do you think you are? You coming
3-0? Yeah,
and saying 3-0. Like what? You look, make yourself look like an idiot. Like, okay, you want to support your team, or be a bit smart. Be like, okay, I think Chelsea are going to get the win. Going out and saying 3-0. You're like, what are you doing? You know nothing about football.
I'd say that under Roman, obviously Roman is very cutthroat. He used to fire managers whenever they... No manager at Chelsea's ever overstayed their welcome. Roman made sure of that.
But it worked.
It worked and it was controlled chaos, I'd say. This is pure chaos, completely uncontrolled, and no one knows what's going on there.
The
hardest part for me to understand is the problem with the dressing room. The attitude of the players on the pitch, they're not doing their work. They're just not.
Yeah,
and the very few that are playing good games here and there are not consistent.
I think that's what confuses me the most. Like, yes, you can have bad sort of, the behind the scenes of the club, the way that the club itself is managed and whatever. But that in my opinion, shouldn't affect the way the attitude of the players, especially with the money that they're on, the money that they were brought in for, the respect that these players, and also the players that have been in the club a long time.
See, this is what pisses me off. Sterling is on £300,000 a week, and he just plays shit. He doesn't try. He just runs. I saw him against Brighton, and he's just standing. He's not doing anything. I'm seeing all these players. They don't care. They don't care about the club. They couldn't care less. No one there wants to play for the badge except for few. Gallagher.
Maybe Kovacic.
Kovacic, inconsistent.
I wish you could put Azpilicueta back on that pitch.
Why?
Put him in that three at the back. Just to shout at everyone. Get everyone in order. You know, team to captain has to be on the pitch.
That's what Thiago Silva has been trying to do this whole season.
Yeah. Yeah, like, honestly, I've seen Azpilicueta be a bit, you know, you can be a captain, but I don't think he's a leader.
But I'll
give
you...
It's not hard to come and say, come on, lads, let's go.
To me, still, it's really not a problem with the captaincy, with the leadership. It's, as you say, look at Casemiro and his impact at United. I mean, you can see that they're a different team when he plays because he's a serial winner, that guy, and he's won everything, and he knows how to motivate his players. He fights. He wants to win things. He's gone on a long contract there. You know, he didn't come as like a, okay, goodbye football. No, he came to play competitive football.
Okay, wait. So that's one thing. Manchester United have gotten previous Real Madrid players in the past under different managers, and then they haven't succeeded, and they're still world class. Mm. Like, you could have seen David Moyes sign Casemiro, and it wouldn't have been the same.
No, but what United did is target Van Gaal for a long time, got in touch, have given him a bit more autonomy on signing players, on who he wants. He's brought a lot of players from Ajax, okay? And then he understood that there was a hole, there was a gap in that midfield.
Sign Anthony for 100 million?
Well, the price tags are not important to the manager. The manager has nothing to do with how much a club pays.
But how could he go and have confidence to tell the owners, yes,
because,
pay the
because
money?
Because they have put confidence in his ability to manage the team, okay? United are third place in the Premier League, okay? That's probably the best achievement in 5 years.
Since Mourinho, I think. They came second.
So, yeah. And I you can't argue with him at this point. You can't. He has been extremely good with them.
The signings
that he's made have all been somewhat... I wouldn't say Anthony's been very successful.
But he's starting to find some
form. But he's starting to find form. Martinez has been a fantastic signing, £50 million. It was heavily criticised for it at the beginning because he was small, because it's that he knew exactly what he could get out of him.
Okay, so he's got a couple of hits, maybe two.
Varane, fantastic signing.
Varane hasn't been playing well. That's not Real Madrid Varane.
I'm sorry.
Varane,
class is permanent, my friend. Form is temporary, class is permanent. To me, Varane has proven beyond doubt that he is a world-class centre-back.
Okay, you think he's getting into Manchester City's team?
Sure.
Who's he going to replace? World-class City defence. You think he's getting in the team?
I rate Varane gets rotated in and out of that defence. Like,
yeah,
no.
Rotating. I think now. Maybe not right now, Ruben Dias isn't... I mean, he's a very good defender.
He's quality.
Okay, I think he gets in front of Akanji, definitely.
Akanji doesn't start.
I think Varane starts. No, Akanji does start.
He rotates.
Everyone rotates.
But not as a centre-back.
What do you mean? Akanji doesn't play centre-back. Yeah, okay. Well, he kind of does play centre-back. The way that Guardiola's defense works this season is absolutely ridiculous.
He can also play right back.
Guardiola has been a joke this season because he has switched the way that his team plays about four times this season, and he's finding ways to win all of those games, and being successful. Just the way that he motivates and the way that he trains his players is.
See, that's my question. If you bring now a manager with personality, I think that's what's missing at Chelsea. That's the only thing that can help the dressing. Come in there, not be like Graham Potter, oh, you lose to Southampton, then you're like, oh, we had a great game, you know. They played their best, a great performance, and we look on to the next game.
But again, it's just like, they lacked the common sense, you know.
Is Enrique the man?
Like you know, you could have asked a guy on the street, a Chelsea player coming out of the stadium and said, do you want Graham Potter? They would have said no. Because, Brighton were playing good football, but he was there for 4 years.
What's his name? That manager who's now for that French team. What's his name?
Will Still.
Yeah. We should have got Will Still.
Well, that would be... Look, I mean, that's even bigger risk than Graham Potter. He hasn't proved anything yet. But again...
Who hasn't proved?
No, Will Still, okay. He's doing well in Ligue 1, but with a young group of players. But that doesn't... Okay, but it goes back to the same point. Graham Potter was managing Brighton. They were playing great football for a period of time. And then he was snapped up by Chelsea... Doesn't mean that that's proving anything.
I'll say something.
Did he win anything?
Who?
Graham Potter. Did he win anything? You've got,
yeah, but he was at like a middle table team. So you have to
feel sorry for Potter. When he left Brighton, he really must have thought his career wasn't one way upward trajectory.
See, that's what I thought.
But I don't think he's done.
I know, but he really...
He's got Chelsea on his resume. So.
He really did crash back down to earth at Chelsea.
I never
thought he seemed like he was getting ahead of himself.
And Brighton have kicked on since he's left at the Derby.
The Derby is a fantastic man.
Do you think we made a mistake sacking Potter? Do you think we should have given him more time?
It was the wrong fit, I think.
It was the wrong fit from the beginning. And
why was it a wrong fit?
Because, again, you said, look, if you're signing all these players, young players, players that need direction in order to achieve. Coaching.
Yeah, but
Mudrik the other Yusuf Fofana, whatever his name is, Fofana, the one at the front.
That's right, Fofana.
Yeah. Noni Madueke, Enzo Fernandez.
Yeah, but if Potter was doing this before Semedo was now worth 80 million, he was doing it with these players before they had such huge profiles.
Well, it doesn't matter.
He was doing
that's
it before.
That's the point. Well, that's the point.
So then why couldn't he do it?
No, it makes a huge difference.
Why?
Because players have egos. And when a player moves from PSV... playing okay football, moves to the Premier League, Chelsea, okay, I don't think Enzo Fernandez is an egotistical player, but he's still, for me, he's been one of Chelsea's best players this season. I don't think there's a doubt in that.
Yeah, but I think the bar there is not high enough.
The what?
The bar there, you're setting.
Great, that's the point.
When you're saying that Enzo's one of the best Chelsea's players this season, I don't think the bar is high enough. Look, not as it should be in Chelsea.
You can tell me, no, but listen, if you put Enzo Fernandez into a Liverpool side, or into a City side,
different.
Or into an Arsenal side,
wow.
People would say he's the best midfielder in the world. It's just the fact that when you're playing as a pivot and your team isn't winning, it's got nothing to do with your performance. It's about, if you watch progresses, how he creates opportunities for his teammates, okay? He has assists, He almost have scored a goal this season, you know.
No, he's world class. Don't get me wrong.
He's world class, and he's shown it.
He is world class. We spent 100 million on Lukaku. Now we spent 60 million on Nkunku.
But I don't think you need to bring anyone in.
But we need a striker.
Well, Nkunku's coming. Well, I'm sorry. You're going to have Lukaku, Nkunku, Aubameyang, Kai Havertz all on the bench next season, and you're going to have to make it work.
And that's it. It's good. It's good to have them on the bench. Not on the pitch. Those
question.
Are strikers that you should have on the bench, not on the pitch.
Nagelsmann or Enrique?
Enrique.
Why?
I think he has the character needed to manage all those young players at Chelsea.
Nagelsmann doesn't it?
I think for Chelsea, Nagelsmann's a benefit.
Why do you think?
I think in...
Yeah, you always like to go German, don't you?
No. I think
Beamer.
I think the style of football in UK... Like Spanish or Latin players, I'd say Enrique has the edge in managing them. But a club like Chelsea, where it's quite cutthroat, less room to experiment, and very results orientated from the gun, I think you would want to go for like an Nagelsmann.
I'll be honest, I thought the same as you with Pep when he was in Bayern. I didn't know how he would do at City. And then he came and he did wonders. Like Enrique, if you watch Spain, how they played.
They were fantastic.
They were really good.
But he did have Gavi and Pedri in that midfield.
That's true. Enrique. Yeah, but we have fucking Gallagher. We have Gallagher. I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay, Gallagher was fantastic at Palace
Gallagher.
Last season.
I think,
but
when
you know, it's Palace.
Chelsea are full of Cockney players, like your Rices. Well, not Rice, not yet, but like your Mounts and your Gallaghers and... I think they're more suited to a Nagelsmann style of football. On the other hand, if you're to ask me at Liverpool, Enrique or Nagelsmann, I'd probably go Enrique because there's more Liverpool fans tend to.
I think we need personality. I think I agree with you.
I don't think you can talk about the fans here.
Yeah, but
the fans want results. They want to see the investments of the club and the team playing well.
Yeah, but I don't want results if my team are playing bad. Like, I've always seen now. I'm watching Chelsea now.
Of course you want results.
No, no, no. Yeah, let me stop you for a second, okay?
That's the In the long run,
no, no, no. In the long run, you need your team to be playing well. Because now, I remember Gallagher scored and the whole team was going crazy. Well, and I was upset because I was like, we are so shit. And he scores a lucky goal off a deflection and the team, like, everyone's going mad. But what are you getting happy for? It's not like we're good now. We're just terrible. There's nothing to see.
Yeah. But I'll tell you this. But with Tuchel,
Chelsea were insane.
No, but what I'll tell you is, of course. No, I'm not saying to you that...
The true aspect of...
We're not talking about results. I know results... Look, results are always the most important thing. Okay?
That's, I disagree there.
No. However, I'm not denying the fact... Wait, let me finish.
Sit the fuck down.
I'm saying, okay... Both of these managers have very good playing styles. They are winning playing styles. Okay, Luis Enrique, in my opinion, has been out of the game for a bit too long.
That's the only thing I'm afraid of. And Nagelsmann's he had Barcelona, he had Messi.
Coming off of the Bayern project, and he was doing well with Bayern. In my opinion, he was doing well with Bayern. He took PSG apart. It's not that difficult, but he did really play well. And they fired him, you know, in the quarterfinal of the Champions League, going into a big game with City that was, you know, poised as a 50-50. Okay, and then he gets sacked. Mm-hmm. To me, there's some inside trading, you know, maybe Chelsea like just sack him now so we can get him in the summer or something. But look, to me the most important thing is as follows. Okay, you've got Luis Enrique. He's a great manager. He's been a little bit out of it. Doesn't have Premier League experience. He's only managed in La Liga, in my opinion. Is that right?
Yeah.
La Liga is a very different thing. Nagelsmann. Similar to Tuchel, similar to Klopp, coming from Bundesliga, big personalities, coming in as sort of semi-young managers, but now he has experience.
And he didn't leave Bayern
in bad terms at all. He was playing good football.
But Bayern were not even first. It's not hard.
Dortmund were also playing fantastic. Yeah, but
Bayern were dominating seasons, every season.
But that point to me is so stupid. Sorry to say it. Because football is advancing every day, okay? Every team is getting more and more on the level of other teams.
That's also true. Dortmund were like on a streak.
I want to ask you a question, though. Freiburg are fourth this season.
As a football fan, would you rather have your team win or would you rather have your team be fun to watch?
And not win?
Fun to watch.
But do they get the results?
Sometimes.
Are you a loyal football fan or not?
Are you a football fan or are you a results fan? I'm sorry, my friend.
Do you like winning or do you like football?
Okay. If I'm a Real Madrid supporter, okay, if a Real Madrid supporter comes up to me and I say to him, you guys are playing like shit. Yeah, but we won 3 Champions Leagues in 4 years. What are you going to say to me? I love watching beautiful football. I love watching beautiful football.
Listen, I know you're a Boca Juniors fan.
Don't talk to me about philosophy. Don't talk about philosophy.
No, it's not philosophy.
But Boca has the philosophy of winning at all costs, and River Plate like to play nicer football.
Real Madrid has the same philosophy.
It doesn't matter. They do. It doesn't matter. So what? But they win. And listen, okay, I'm not saying to you that I'd prefer my teams play scummy football. I don't think that at all. However, if you're a team under pressure, you're looking to win.
Would you stop supporting Boca if they play badly?
No. No cost.
That's my answer. Exactly. Yeah. So why would you rather have your team win if you're not going to stop watching them but they're playing bad football?
Do you mean a big team like Boca or like Chelsea? Boca right now is in the shitter, okay?
As bad as Chelsea.
We just got a new manager, played his first game, lost 1-0 to some average team. Okay? We're like 14th in the table. It's the first time since 1971. But it's not going to change the fact that I support Boca. That's a stupid question, in my opinion. I have to say, you can play great football. You can play great football, and you can be a Brighton that plays great football and scores beautiful goals and wins the semi-easy games and some top six games. But then, you know, they face a City or they face... a big team like, I don't know who's playing right now, United, whatever it is, and you don't get the result, like, what's the point? Like, if you're a team that has such good players, that has a team full of history, that fights for titles, that wins Champions Leagues, And you're sacrificing the fact that you have to play a little bit shit of football, but play on the counter-attack, play route one football. I'm sorry. If you're going to get the results, you're going to get the results.
As a Borussia fan, I'd rather not miss a match day and enjoy watching every single game than win the treble with shitty football. Because I'm a football
I
fan.
Agree.
I'm not only
I,
a Barcelona
but no,
fan.
But,
I'm also
but don't
a fan
get
of
me
sport.
Wrong. Don't get me wrong. I think that it's a bad excuse, especially for a team in top flight football who has good enough players to play bad football. I think it's a terrible excuse.
It's not an excuse.
What Chelsea are doing right now is Chelsea are trying to play nice football to get results. And that's the worst thing that you can do if you're a team under such pressure. However, I truly believe that I think that great football is very important. Very important. Okay, City play great football. Arsenal play beautiful football. United played nice football. The teams that are winning usually play good football.
Sometimes the joy of winning overpowers the joy of watching good football. Ask anyone who's won a World Cup. I'm sure the final wasn't good football. I mean, in this last World Cup, to be fair, it was. But most big tournaments come knockout stages.
Listen,
the football turned shit.
Listen, United used to be a winning machine. But they didn't always play good football.
True.
Again.
And good football subjective,
I
by the
agree,
way.
But listen, the team that is considered to be the best team in history is the Barca of 2009 because they played the best football and they won everything. So, to me, it goes hand in hand. The best teams win and play beautiful football. However, if I have to choose one, I choose results.
Yeah, but good football is very, very, very subjective. You ask a guy from deep Lancashire who supports Burnley what good football is. And he's
no, he's not going to tell you.
A guy
no.
from Stoke-on-Trent.
Everyone knows what good football is. I'm so sorry to say.
I don't know.
No, everyone knows. That's... Everyone can recognize what good football and bad football is. However, the fact, whether you're fact that you're a Burnley fan, you're comfortable with seeing Burnley play Route 1 football, that's fine. That's something else. If you're comfortable with it, it's one thing. But recognizing a good team and a team that plays long balls and hold-up play, that's a whole different thing, right?
And we have to get our friend, Mr. Aaron Bonherbert, back on the pod.
We do.
Back in the air.
Well, again, look, my point is Chelsea have a lot of work to do in that dressing room, particularly. I don't think they have a problem with signings. They have enough players to achieve big, big things. They just need to get the right manager.
And they also need to find...
And the right structure around it.
They've made the most... alterations to their starting lineup of any team in the league by quite
well because
distance.
They've got such squad depth. They have, I mean, every position,
players.
Every position has two players behind it.
I've heard that in squad, there's only the initial dressing room doesn't have enough lockers, so players for like squad meetings are sitting on the floor and stuff like that, which is wild.
Well, you know what? I mean, you could blame the UK government for all of this, but that's up to, you know. But anyways, let's talk about a little bit about the relegation battle. It is scintillating to watch, in my opinion. It's incredible. I mean,
it's something I've never seen before.
Eight teams in the relegate who can get potentially relegated, or nine?
I'm going to exclude.
Chelsea are not in the relegation battle.
So from Palace are on 36. And they're in 12th. Southampton.
So
not
eight
20.
Teams.
Yeah, I'd say Palace are fine as well. I'd say from Wolves.
Well, they could lose two games and be in it. You understand?
But they're in nice form. They won their past three.
Well, okay, but they have David Moyes. We know that can go wrong. Not David Moyes. Who's the manager now? What's his name?
Roy Hodgson.
I don't know why Patrick Vieira got fired. To be honest, I think he's a fantastic manager.
So
He brought everything out of Eze, out of Olise. He brought all these academy players up, started playing fantastic football, good dressing room. You could see it. You could see that they're fighters, those players. He revived Jeffrey Schlupp's fucking career. That guy. Mark Guehi on the scene. I don't know.
Two teams that just shouldn't be there are West Ham and Everton. I mean, Everton, we know it's...
We know how big of clubs they are, but there's no excuse for playing, for not getting results and playing bad football.
But West Ham, the squad is just really good.
It's a strong word. What do you mean? Very good. Okay, they've got Naifa Gerd, centre-back.
I mean, Rice.
Okay, so what?
Ben Rama.
Declan Rice is overrated.
Ben Rama? No, he's not.
He's
overrated.
Right. He is a bit overrated. Okay. Straight up, Enzo Fernandez or Declan Rice? Same position.
How old's Enzo?
22.
Declan?
I think he's 24.
It's a tough one.
No.
This season, obviously, Enzo. But you can't compare. Declan's playing for West Ham.
So what?
I know Chelsea aren't good, but the squad around him, you can't compare.
No, you can't. I mean, but that goes back to... No, I know you can't compare, but what I'm saying is... Well, you can compare because that position is very particular to the fact that it's a very solitary position. It's a very unique set of skills that have to be played by very unique players. And it's very reliant on talent, that position, on... spatial awareness, defensive capability,
yeah, but
range
of
passing.
I think all of those things can actually be trained. Are not
trained, sure. Trained, sure. Trained, sure. But they need talent to be world class.
Yeah, and but I think, for you to get to that level, football, you already reason, need to have the talent.
And to be honest, if Declan Rice wasn't British or wasn't English, I don't think he'd be as highly rated. I just think that the media loves him because he's an English player, because he's meant to be this star in the midfield. They haven't seen in a long time.
Yeah, but
time.
You asked us, and in my case, my bar is not set on how the world sees a player, it's set on how the player plays.
Yeah, how you watch, yeah, exactly. Of course. Well, me too. And I just think that I watch Declan Rice, the helloping horse. He's just the movement, the fluidity of it is amazing. But I don't feel like he has enough attitude and aggression sometimes. I see Enzo always shouting at the ref. Always getting angry, always getting frustrated, okay. Wanting to win, wanting to play.
It's a very Argentine view.
Well, it's not Argentine. It's essential that I can't believe you said that. By the way, I think that the attitude and mentality is 50% of it at least.
Agreed.
Okay, I wanted to compare him to someone else then, someone who has been playing in the Prem for
Calvin Phillips.
No.
Rodri.
No, not Rodri. Stones.
But Stones is not playing. He plays like Rodri. Rodri and him are playing the same position.
Exactly. I'm comparing Enzo to someone that has also been playing in that position in the Premier League for a very short amount of time.
But Stones is not necessarily... I mean, Stones drops into the centre-back. He plays a much deeper role. His role is... Okay, when City have the ball, he drops back. When City have the ball going forward, once they've progressed... He comes into centre back and Akanji moves up, and then when they defend, he takes that defensive role, and then when they receive the ball, he then comes into midfield just to get the ball and play it out to Akanji or to play it to someone else.
Because they're using a double pivot with him and Rodri.
Well, but the thing is
but
that
when they're not, and it has also happened when Rodri's not playing and it's Gundogan, for example, then Stones has a much more decisive role, and he's the one moving the ball forward and creating every single attack from scratch.
Yeah, but
even though
Stones doesn't get forward,
he does
not as much
because he's
that's not his position
though.
Correct.
Exactly.
So then you can't compare because they don't play the same role. In
but
my
it's
opinion,
the same position. Technically.
Okay, but then compare
it's the same position. But
if you can bring up the stats, then fine. I don't believe that they're playing the same role.
Different role, same position on the team.
Well,
sheet.
Okay, yeah. Same position on the team doesn't mean anything. I'm talking about the role of what their function is in this tactical setup.
I agree with you.
I don't think that it's the same. It's the same role. It's the same position, kind of the same physical where he stands. Correct, but I don't think it's the same role, the same responsibilities on the pitch.
It's also a different tactical perspective. What Guardiola has been doing.
Correct, but
it's still football, though.
But Stones can't do what Enzo does. That's what I'm trying to say. He doesn't have the same dribbling capabilities. He doesn't have the same... Well, he has... To me...
But he doesn't need them. That's the thing.
Of course he does. Well, I'm saying... But that's... Again, it's my point. He's not playing the same position.
So you can't compare, I guess.
It's not... You can't compare. That's my point. So, if we take... I don't know. To me, you could compare him to... I mean, if you're still talking about double pivot, you could compare him to Casemiro, even. Or to Sabitzer, or to Bruno Fernandes, even. I think, you know, or a Christian, whatever. You could compare him to, I don't know, Fabinho's playing this season in that position. even yeah. though he doesn't play in such a crowded midfield, they like to play the ball out wide, mm-hmm. Liverpool a lot more. So I always wanted Enzo to go to Liverpool, actually.
I think he would have been great.
He would have changed that team. He would have changed that team, in my opinion.
Now we're looking...
What about Thiago Alcantara when he's not injured?
Well, he's world-class. I mean, his Thiago technique... Alcantara. I think he has... He's in terms of technique, he's one of the best three in the world. 100%.
He's effortless.
Effortless. Every pass just has this little bit of magic on it.
It has a bit of pizzazz.
He really reminds me of a younger Toni Kroos.
Yeah. Yeah. Just a nice... Just drift the ball across and...
So elegant.
And switch. The elegance is there, for sure. But if we're talking about performance... Doesn't have defensive capabilities. He's a pure sentiment.
And he's made out of glass. He can't.
What?
He's made out of glass.
Exactly. He's not a number five. He's not a pure number five.
And that's, you know,
he's an eight. He's an eight.
People like to say, what if? What if he was a bit less injury prone?
You can't what if anyone.
You can't what if. It's a big part of being a professional footballer, being able to withstand injury and condition your body to get through long
for many things, also not to play. I mean, I think I'm always going to give Argentina examples, but Emi Martinez was 10 years struggling, didn't play first team football, suddenly got his opportunity after 10 years, and it came and it paid off.
Well, but Jamie Vardy as well.
Yeah, but the difference Jamie is that playing. Jamie Vardy was in like the English third, fourth division for most of his career. And he suddenly became the striker. And now you watch him, I mean, he's lost it. He's not scoring goals. He had two or three seasons in the Prem.
He lost his first division opportunity, I think he scored 100
and something goals or something.
He's in got, the Prem?
Yeah.
Yeah, he scored many.
He scored a lot of goals. And it's only been two or three seasons. He joined less than 2016. No, it's been a lot more than that. It's been almost 8 years. It's crazy.
I can put the goals up quite easily.
I think he's got 120.
Yeah, but he got his first division football opportunity at 27 years old?
Yeah, no, 28. Yeah,
300 29. Premier League appearances, 134
that's
Premier League
ridiculous.
Goals.
That's almost half a goal a game. Yeah, mm-hmm. It's fantastic.
Almost. And 44 assists, not bad going at all. When he was hot, he was really, really
yeah,
hot.
No, of course. But again,
the Vardy party.
It's about the moments and consistency is always going to beat moments, but there's some players, like for me, Aguero had that consistency of his career. He was always a good striker. Mm-hmm. At Atletico, he was great. At City, he was great. Even when he started at Independiente, you could see that he was a fantastic player. You know, his debut was when he was 15. It's crazy that playing first division football, 15 years old. So, again, going back to my point, if you put Enzo Fernandez in a team that's actually playing well, you'll think he's probably the best midfielder in the Prem, in my opinion. Because his elegance plus his effectiveness is just everything he does on the ball and off the ball, I think is really, really good. But anyways, we go back to the relegation zone. Not to the zone, but to the relegation battle. It would be sad to see especially West Ham. I would be sad to see because imagine, you know, Millwall are in fifth. They're in the playoffs. They're almost in the playoffs. It would be sad to see if Millwall got promoted and West Ham get relegated. That would be hilarious. But it's next season to be able to go to the Den and watch Millwall West Ham.
I mean, you would struggle to get tickets.
No. I have someone. But it would be something special to see that. To see a Millwall West Ham in the Prem.
2023.
That would be, you know, these men, these hooligans would come out of retirement.
I know, they've been waiting
these
for years.
6-year-old men would just come out with bricks and knives and start killing each other in the middle of the street.
I think the last time they played was 2005, and unfortunately, I think someone died.
I'm sure.
Yeah, it's no joke.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Where is the Den in London?
It's also in East London. I went to West Ham recently, actually. I went to the Olympic Park.
Apparently the atmosphere is quite there at the Olympic.
It's horrible. I mean, It's really sad because Belen Ground is always was a hot, tough place to go to.
Upton Park. Yeah, well, Upton Park. The players, the stands are right on the players. Just
yeah, no, I mean, it's sad. You know what? I feel like the modernization of stadiums in most cases is always a down factor for the way that for the atmosphere. Like, you take a team like Leeds, and Old Trafford as well. Older stadiums that have been renovated a little bit, but you can just see that the atmosphere is there. And it's just because the fans are so close. Huh?
Anfield as well.
There's this new concept in these new stadium renovations where they bring an acoustic expert for them to make the atmosphere louder. That's what happened at the Bernabeu. That's what's going on there.
Yeah.
That's why the renovations are taking so long.
Yeah, but it's great. But I'm saying the most intimidating thing is when the fans are really close and the stands are high, right? The Bernabeu has that because it's a really tall stadium. You know, La Bombonera, in my opinion, is so special because it's so tall. I mean,
it also vibrates.
Well, it moves.
It does move.
It moves, and also, of course, I mean, the fans themselves are just so committed to singing the whole game and everything. But just it's the combination.
I did fulfill my dream to go to Avoc 2008.
I also went around that time actually.
In December?
No, it would have been in April, or in March, something like that, because that's when I usually used to go. But anyways.
Goodison is the oldest stadium in England.
Which one?
Goodison.
Yeah.
The atmosphere is quite electric.
It is. It's not bad.
It's a small ground, very old, but Everton are moving ground in a couple of years, so let's hope they can.
But it's so sad.
Maintain the atmosphere at the new. But they'll never.
You see, I feel like people get used to stadiums and they get used to the way that the crowd and the atmosphere and the feeling comes and goes, and they know they're sitting next to, and they know that they can rely on that guy to sing. It's so bad when, I mean, look, for me, the best team who has done a good job, is Spurs.
Yeah, agreed. Because
built a beautiful stadium, good atmosphere.
They built a home. They built a proper home stadium. They built a home stadium.
I think that it cannot be. I actually really wanted to go to Crystal Palace to what's that stadium called?
Selhurst Park,
special stadium as well. Good atmosphere, especially on a nice Monday night. Under the lights, it gets very rowdy.
With the flags and the drums.
Exactly. Arsenal started playing drums all of a sudden. Like, you think they're South Americans? These guys, like, who do they think they are? But apparently it's working because they're playing good football. But
dropping off a little bit.
Well, we can go into that.
Mm-hmm.
Dropping off a bit is a strong word, okay? They've had, what, two games where they've had two draws?
Liverpool and then...
That's not dropping off.
Yeah, but when City start winning, you can't be dropping.
I agree.
It's not that City started winning.
I agree with that.
They're just consistent.
Yeah, but City always end strong.
But Arsenal, I know that's a statistic, actually, that... City finished strong.
Liverpool won 13 games on the trot, finished on like 100 points. City won 14 games.
Well,
won the league.
I'll tell you this. I believe that City will win the league because of these two draws, but I don't think that you can say that Arsenal have completely dropped off. Okay, they've had injuries. Okay, Saliba's been out for a few weeks now. We know that makes a big difference to them. Zinchenko was also injured in the last game, who's been really pivotal in creating attacks.
They got a good Liverpool showed up in Anfield.
But that's the thing. Like, it's so frustrating that, because who the hell are Liverpool to show up at this point?
We always show up against
the
top six.
Who are you?
You
know,
teams.
Like, just, you're not going anywhere this season.
But I think Arsenal will be kicking themselves because they're prior to draws, they're up 2-0 in both of those games.
Yeah.
No, it's not the draw itself or the result that will tank Arsenal. It's the moral impact of being up 2-0 and then drawing that game.
And Saka missing a pen as well.
It doesn't matter against who.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter against who.
And Jesus gave him the pen as well. That's crazy.
It's the moral impact that has on the team and the players that will tank Arsenal.
Arsenal do need to be more ruthless.
Saka has his head down right now. The last two games he has not shown up. and the whole season they relied on him.
Wouldn't you though?
Well, I'm not talking about just after the pen. I'm talking about the last 2-3 games he has not been performing. And I believe that has amalgamated into him missing the penalty.
No, of course, but so, it's hard to keep your momentum as such a young player in a high stakes league.
Well, but he's proven again and again. To me, I don't understand. First of all, I don't believe that you can switch motivation and
no, it's not like you turn on a switch and now you're motivated. It doesn't work that way.
No, well, that's what I'm saying. No, I'm not saying that you're turning a switch. But okay, you have played 30 games of the season. You're first place. Okay, you suddenly have 2 bad games. You missed a pen. But you look back on the other 28 games that you played this season, the goals, the assists, the great moments you've lived in the Arsenal shirt. How can then you drop your head off all of a sudden and say, no, oh my gosh, the confidence is gone, the motivation. You can't tell me week to week, okay, that a player has lost his motivation. It's crazy to say that. It's crazy to say that a player doesn't have the motivation.
I'm not saying he doesn't have it. I'm saying that it's hard to keep your head up when it's you're not. Going for those times.
It's not. Why is it?
Because it's so much pressure. It's not only results that are drawing your head.
Pressure is, again, you have shown to yourself, to the fans, that you are capable of doing what you're doing. I have no doubt that if you ask an Arsenal fan, if they trust Saka to do the job, that they will say yes. 99.9% of the time, you ask an Arsenal fan, they say yes. Because he's shown that. So now, with that thought in mind, you then go, you have 2 bad games, whatever. You can't then say to yourself, okay, I can't, too much pressure. I can't handle it. I'm too young. Or I don't feel like I can handle it. You can handle it because you've shown yourself the whole season that you can handle it. So to me, all this dropping confidence, dropping motivation, you know, you're on a high contract. You're playing good football. There's a system that works. You've shown yourself that again and again. To me, it's crazy to understand how players can lose motivation so quickly. It's crazy. To me, it's almost like a spoiled brat, okay? Who doesn't get what he wants, and he starts sulking in the corner. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. I don't know if you guys agree with that, but to me, you know, as with experience, with this season, with the Bees, I don't think it's too much pressure there.
But I think it's different when you're still the underdog, even if you're winning the league right now. They're still the underdog.
The underdog is always... If you're
the
saying
underdog
you're
always has more pressure.
No, the opposite. The opposite.
Especially when they're winning.
You're the title-winning team. Your city. You play the best football. The pressure's way higher there. Okay, the expectation's higher. Right now, everyone's expecting City to go
exactly
to the
Arsenal underdog.
That makes Arsenal the underdog. And when the underdog is winning, that's when they have the most pressure. Because they're winning, they have to keep going that way.
No, they
have
don't.
To keep that up. Of course they do. If they don't, they'll lose points. Like right now it happened.
Okay, but what I'm saying is,
I think Arsenal need to be more ruthless. Whenever they go 2-0 up, they take their foot off the gas. Off the pedal.
Yeah, of course.
Score that third, score that fourth. Put the game out of reach. That's a problem
with Arteta more. The way that he motivates his players, he encourages. But I think he'll correct that. And they have who do they play before City?
So I have their fixtures up now. To be fair, Arsenal and City have similar difficulty in terms of remaining fixtures, but City do have that game in hand.
Yeah, and they're playing each other.
Yeah, so that's huge cash. Arsenal have just Southampton, who are bottom, so they should bounce back with a nice win.
That could be a nice confidence booster. Sort out their problems on the pitch in terms of finishing off the game, and then go to City and give it everything. Give it absolutely everything. You know, even if it means changing their playing style a little bit, having to sit back, defend, which we know they can do that.
Yeah, and they'll have to. They have no other choice with a team that has
no
27 goals in 6 games.
Well, okay, but you can say that, but then you can say, okay, we're the underdogs right now, but we can't let them play their game. We have to impose our playing style as well. Okay, we can analyze the game, the reverse fixture. Was it 3-0 to City at the Arsenal? 3-1.
I think it was 3-1.
That City dominated them that game. But it wasn't like they were completely out of it. They had their chances, didn't take them. I think Jesus was still injured at that point.
Yeah.
He was.
It makes a big difference.
I think Nketiah scored for Arsenal.
Yes, Nketiah scored.
My memory serves me correct.
Look, I've seen Arsenal struggle in these games. I also thought when they played United and they beat them, what was it, 4-2? 3-2. I think United didn't do enough. I feel like they could have gone for the win when it was 2-2. They just decided to sit in and wait for the win. I don't think City will do that. But what I do believe is that they'll put up a fight. I still think City will win that game and then eventually win the league. That's my prediction. I just think that they're too strong mentally. They have the eyes on the prize. Their form is incredible.
4 points behind game in hand.
Haaland alone just wants to get that record. He will get that record.
He's equaled it already, I'm pretty sure.
No, on 32. He needs to get 34 to equal it.
Salah's.
Salah.
32.
Yes.
No, well, but Andy Cole and Alan Shearer have 34. That's the record.
Yeah, sorry. I just think Liverpool.
Yeah. No.
To Salah's, I'm like, okay.
And he's got 8 games to do it in, and he's going to do it. And
he needs 3 goals to have to hold the record.
Yeah.
And he has 8 games to do that.
I think that it's inevitable, obviously. But look, I'm going to say, regardless of whether Arsenal win the league or not, it's been a huge achievement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I still want them to win the league.
Yeah, look, it would be beautiful for them to win the league. But I don't think they're going to do it.
So say they don't win the league next season.
Again, it also depends on City. It also depends on City keeping their form. Who says they're going to keep their form?
We're just talking on stats. City historically have very strong finishes.
Great. Fantastic. But who says that they're going to keep their form as well?
Who says Arsenal aren't going to carry on dipping?
Well, but because the only thing I see, I don't think Arsenal will dip. I think Arsenal will win the remaining games of the season apart from the City game. I think that's it.
And if Arsenal will do that.
Because if Arsenal lose the City game.
They have Chelsea after City.
They'll then go, okay, we now have no choice but to go and win everything and try and hold City back and hope that they lose a game, hope that they draw a game. They have no choice but to do that if they lose that game. So unless they shock the world and win that game at the Etihad, I don't know.
I think it's still possible anyways. The
Premier League has shown us time and again, it is the most unpredictable league in the world. I mean, imagine the sport betting companies this year must be having a laugh. They must be having a laugh. I mean, the amount of upsets, ridiculous, you know, changes in score lines last minute, you know, just so much has gone crazy and wrong this season. It's beautiful.
It's beautiful. I think that's fantastic. A word.
It's beautiful.
It's football.
It's so addictive to watch. I mean,
who gets fourth?
Fourth, Newcastle.
You think?
I mean, look, it all depends on the last couple of games. Maybe even Brighton.
Do you think Brighton?
Yeah, Brighton could do that. I mean, what are they? They're sixth now, no?
No, Brighton are seventh.
They're seventh.
And how many points are they behind sixth, who is?
1 and 2 games. 1 point and 2 games behind.
Or two games behind. 2 games in hand. That's important. And what? Who are they behind?
Villa.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, well, imagine Villa.
Villa just have played 2 more games than Brighton. That's the problem.
Yeah, well, but imagine Villa going into top four.
Villa 5 on the bounce. They won 5 games in a row.
Villa are 3 points behind Spurs and 6 points behind Newcastle. Imagine, Newcastle have a game in hand as well.
Yeah.
They win both their games, they will be a point behind Newcastle. And that just means that, I mean, that's at least Europa League.
Yeah, but whose games do they have in hand, though? Against who? No, that's the thing. Both that's the question.
Well, okay, but Brighton are playing, sorry, that's Liverpool. Brighton are playing, I got it. They're playing United. Playing United next week. And then they play Nottingham. They play Wolves. Sorry, FA Cup this week. Sorry about that. Nottingham, then Wolves. Tough game at Wolves. Then United in the Prem.
Where?
At Brighton.
Okay.
Then they play again at home against Everton. Then they have Arsenal. Tough game that. Southampton, Villa. And I think that's it. But that is... I mean, there's some very winnable games there. But they've still got Arsenal. They've still got United.
Look, Villa, I think they'll be very, very happy with any European football.
Mm. But it's going to be similar to West Ham, where they've had... West Ham had that strong finish. They got Europa League. They got Conference League. And then they get stretched with the squad. So, again, and it's always going to be the same. Leicester as well, when they won the league and they went to the Champions League. It's always going to be the same story, in my opinion. But the difference is, at least, is that Villa have been very good in the transfer market. When they get Diego Carlos back as well.
Yeah.
If they decide to sign another centre-back, because I think Tyrone Mings is not up to it.
Yeah, you've never been a fan.
Never been a fan. I don't believe that Leon Bailey has performed. I think Buendia has been fantastic. I think that John McGinn is great. They might need another centre mid that is a bit more defensive.
Mm-hmm.
So like a kind of Douglas Luiz position. But all in all, they have a pretty, pretty solid squad. Danny Ings is no longer a viable option, in my opinion. They get another cheap kind of £20 million pound striker for somewhere. That could be good. So, again, who knows? If they get those European spots, they could do something. But, you know, you never know. But it would be nice to see Villa up there and Brighton. I don't think Spurs deserve anything near Europe this season. I think Newcastle have shown, with a bit of money and good management, you can do anything in this league.
Mm-hmm.
Also, they're dropping off. I mean, they got destroyed the other day. Who was it by? 3-0 by Aston Villa.
Newcastle, yeah. It was on the weekend.
Yeah,
it was a big result.
It was a huge result.
Yeah, a little bit of hope in my heart that Liverpool might be able to come forth. Very unlikely, but
yeah, well, let's see. I don't think Liverpool in the conversation as much. I mean, who knows? There's 8 games left. It's the most pivotal point of the season.
Anything's possible. But
when the best games happen.
This is the most beautiful league in the world. And you know what? Let's just enjoy it. Let's see what happens. I can't wait. Well, it's been a pleasure today.
Thank you for having me back. It's been awesome.
It's been really good speaking with you guys. I think we've got some good points across today. And we'll see you guys soon. Thank you very much for listening.
Cheers.
The Dodgy Linesman. With Adam Rarway, Dan Moritz, Yoni Gill, and Aaron Herbert.
All our shows and podcasts available online on our website and on all podcast platforms. Search Audioversity.